Steve Ballmer, his son, Pete, turns out he's a comedian.
I played the Mega Millions this week. I think it got up over $1 billion. And I spent $2 thinking I could change my kids' lives. I could turn them into comedians.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to GeekWire. I'm GeekWire co-founder Todd Bishop, and I'm here with GeekWire reporter Kurt Schlosser. It's great to have you here, Kurt.
Hey, Todd. Good to be here.
You and I are steering the ship this week in the absence of our colleague, Taylor Soper. And I was like, come on in, Kurt. Let's talk. Because you had a couple of fascinating stories on the site this week, one of which I know you've been working on for quite a while, about a electronic sniffing dog, a police dog that we want to talk about later on. But first, you got to ride in something very different, and that was a Tesla Cybertruck. Just this past week, it pulled up here at our office in Seattle's Fremont neighborhood, and it was driven by Javier Larrauchi, the head of AI startup HAL 9, who was really one of the first people in the city to get this thing. What is the Cybertruck?
You're right. It's different. It's Tesla's answer to a beefier electric vehicle. It serves a audience that, I guess, wants to go off-road a little bit, maybe wants something a little more rugged. It doesn't look like your traditional pickup truck, but in all intents and purposes, it's supposed to be a pickup. It looks like something out of Blade Runner. You know, when this thing was first announced 4 years ago by Tesla and Elon Musk, it was both mocked and sort of revered, you know, kind of like a lot of his stuff is and a lot of the ways that he is. And when Javier pulled up last Friday to show it off to me and to give me a ride and ultimately let me drive the thing, I was both intrigued and sort of laughing on the inside, as I think Javier might have been as well.
The reactions that you got were just stunning, and a big part of your story was about how people reacted to it. And the quote that really stuck with me after seeing this thing on the road and seeing you drive off with Javier was, "It looks like a weird pixelated car, like something glitched out in the rendering."
Yeah. The young woman who said that out at Golden Gardens hit the nail on the head. I mean, the thing for the audience who maybe hasn't seen one and wants me to sort of visualize it over this podcast, it's very angular. It's steel. It's made of stainless steel. It's got very sharp edges. It's not like your traditionally rounded off car. And it's just a very blunt, cold truck with very large wheels, a huge windshield, a huge back end. The back end is square. The front end is square. It's just the weirdest thing I've ever seen, and the weirdest design choices.
Now, it is a truck, but the bed, at least as Javier was driving it around, was covered. Is it always covered, or can you pop it up? How did that part work?
Yeah, that cover over the back bed retracts so that you can expose it and, you know, do all your weekend warrior type stuff with whatever home improvement projects you're doing with your $100,000 vehicle.
and that is how much it costs, because it was originally pitched at $40,000. And the ultimate price tag for people like Javier who are buying it initially here is $100,000.
Yeah. When he hit the buy button, it cost him $100 to reserve the truck. And it was pitched as between $35,000 and $40,000, and that price tag grew to $100,000 by the time he took delivery. What do you get for $100,000? Well, you get a very unique vehicle that, for all intents and purposes, as Javier put it, is a computer on wheels. It's got a lot of power, like a regular Tesla. It's roomy on the inside. You could easily fit three people across the back seat. It's got a ton of headroom. It's got a lot of unique, quirky design touches on the inside, very minimalist. Couple things that stuck out to me. It's got this little half steering wheel, which took some getting used to. If you're sitting in the driver's seat and you extend your arm, you know, normally you can reach up to where your glass meets the front dashboard. It's got to be 4 feet, Todd, for that distance. And it really makes you just feel like you're driving the longest vehicle on the road, which it felt like last week.
You took a video as you went along with Javier. So let's listen to a few audio highlights from that.
How do you like the steering wheel? To me, it's a little strange.
It takes like 2 minutes to get used to it, and then you really love it. It's kind of like the story of this Cybertruck. It's it's like the first is like, wait, don't need to turn like, you know, full 360, right, or something, and you get used to it. Same for regenerative braking.
You don't even need to apply the
brake at all. You just leave your foot out of the accelerator and it just breaks.
Here's some more gawkers.
Yeah, there's a lot of people. Really? It's so fun. I think just looking at people around.
So I wouldn't say it feels like driving a traditional truck. I mean, I guess it feels a little, you're up a little high. It's got some ruggedness to it. There's a cop I gotta pull over for. I hope he's not coming after us.
Somebody Hopefully probably, not, we haven't done anything.
Somebody called in a spaceship.
Works really well.
Mind if I accelerate a little
Go
bit?
For it, please do.
Holy heck. That's nice.
We should go to I-5 or something. Kurt is a good driver. I vouch for this. Definitely.
So that was Kurt Schlosser, GeekWire reporter in the Tesla Cybertruck with Javier Larashi, the head of AI startup HAL9, who was one of the first in the Seattle region to receive the Tesla Cybertruck. Kurt, you described the acceleration, but you also, it seemed, had some issues with the braking, the generative braking. What was that like? How did it feel?
Yeah, and this is something that I have felt in other EVs. I had never driven any other Tesla vehicles. I hadn't had the opportunity to do so. The truck was my first Tesla. But most EVs, I think maybe all EVs, have what's called generative braking. So you let off the gas and the vehicle immediately slows down. And it can be a little off-putting. And in this big vehicle, I just either forgot or wasn't prepared for how blunt it was. I don't think I touched the brakes the whole time I was driving it, except maybe sitting at a light where I wanted to make sure I wasn't going to roll away.
You also wrote that the ability to raise or lower the suspension several inches from sport mode to off-road just by pushing a button on the touchscreen was definitely cool. And that, to me, was spoken like the true owner of a Jeep, right?
Yeah, that might have been my favorite thing because it rides a little low over these very large wheels in sport mode. And then I was like, can't you raise these things? Isn't there like an off-road? And so a couple flicks of the touchscreen, Javier goes into the off-road and chooses like a Baja setting and hits the button. And I'm like, did it raise? And we got out and I had a steeper step to get down to the ground. And I looked at the vehicle and there must have been a good 8 inches of clearance above those wheels. It really made a stark difference. We didn't take it off-road to test whether that felt any better, but I liked the appearance that it gave the truck.
You said that you had a hard time even just finding the turn signals, which is so funny because like that's possibly one of the most basic things in the car apart from the accelerator.
It was totally learned memory of 40 years of driving where I kind of swiped to the left of the steering wheel when I wanted to make a right turn thinking I would hit the lever that would go right. But the turn signals are two little arrows on the steering wheel. In a driving situation, certainly you're going to get used to that. And I did get used to some of the quirks of the truck as I was driving it. But it was a little off-putting at first to be like, where's that arrow? I'm going right. And just to click that like you would on a keyboard.
It sounds like the suspension is not all that great. It felt very much like going over a pothole in just any normal car in your Jeep.
Yeah, I mean, I think any pothole in Seattle is going to be a test for suspension, no matter what vehicle you're driving. But there are sort of luxury vehicles that will give you a little softer ride. I just feel like we hit something going down Shoal through the industrial part of Ballard that rattled my teeth a little bit. And I'm like, shouldn't this thing have the ability to sense that pothole and just float over the top of it?
It is almost like a spaceship, as one of the people who was in the neighborhood mentioned when it first drove up. And then the other thing, too, is that giant single windshield wiper you mentioned.
Yeah. Have you ever changed the wipers on whatever you drive?
I have attempted.
Yeah.
It is one of the most deceptively difficult things to do with a vehicle. And I've given up. When I go in for an oil change, I just say, give me the new wipers. It's like, it's not worth my time.
I thank God for YouTube. A number of things that I fix on my vehicle and even around the house, I rely on YouTube religiously. And wipers, windshield wipers are one of them. And the fact that the Cybertruck has one windshield wiper, it's about, I want to say it's probably 3.5 feet long. And it covers this giant expanse of glass. And it just, you know, it's beautiful to watch it in motion. And it was definitely raining pretty good when we were driving around. All I could think was, if that thing eventually wore out or broke, it's probably going to cost $200, maybe $300 to replace it. And, you know, normal wipers on a normal car are maybe $30 to $40. And it kind of drove home the fact that that's a $100,000 vehicle you're driving around in and nothing's going to be cheap on it.
Okay. Setting aside price, because price for me in this case, at least, would be a disqualifier for this truck. But setting aside price, if someone were to gift this to you and say, I'll take your Jeep away from you, you can have the Cybertruck for free, would you take that deal? Would you make this your daily driver?
That's really tough because, you know, I shared images of my experience on Instagram and people made fun of it and they were like, no, don't do it. I think some people thought I was buying one or test driving one. And I have really no desire to get into a vehicle that attracts that much attention to itself and to me. But that being said, it's really fun to be in something new and to learn how, you know, these things work and given the chance to like live out in the desert with it, maybe where I'm not around so many people, I would just beat the hell out of it. Like this, it'd be fun to see what happened to the stainless steel finish on it and see what it can really do in an environment where you took it off road. I know there's plenty of videos online where they're getting stuck in the snow. There was one that was towed out by a Ford pickup truck that went viral. So I don't think I would trade my current Jeep for a Cybertruck, but the right automaker that comes along and does the right EV 4x4 truck will definitely get my attention.
Rivian, perhaps?
I think the Rivians are more attractive. They're a little more practical looking.
They blend in a little bit more. You have to really look and see, okay, that's the one with the vertical oval headlights to understand that it's a Rivian. To your point, there is no driving anonymously in that Cybertruck. I mean, it is a spectacle. And to me, that would be the biggest turnoff. It's just not something that you can get back and forth from home to work in a way that doesn't create a big scene.
Yeah. And even in the week since I wrote that story, I've heard from friends, I saw one in Magnolia. I got a text today. I saw one in West Seattle. I can't imagine parking that thing on Capitol Hill. So people are already reacting as, you know, because the deliveries are going to start to proliferate and you'll see more of them. And then maybe after that, it'll start to look a little less sore thumby.
I don't know. All right. I will link from the show notes to Kurt's coverage and his video of his firsthand experience with the Tesla Cybertruck. Coming up next, you're not going to believe what these dogs can do.
I wanted a career in IT, but I didn't know where to start. WGU makes it simple. Their accredited online degree programs cover all kinds of IT specialties, and they have valuable industry certifications built in at no extra cost. The payoff? Having those certs back up my degree makes me look even better to future employers. A nonprofit university that includes top industry certs in their programs? I choose WGU. Learn more at wgu.edu/IT certs included.
Welcome back. It's Todd Bishop. I'm here this week with GeekWire reporter Kurt Schlosser. It's great to have you here, Kurt.
Thank you, Todd.
You had a couple of interesting stories this week that really caught my attention. One of them is one that's been in the works for a while. Close readers of the site will remember that there was an incident on the Expedia campus with the discovery of some hidden spy cameras. And we covered that one thoroughly. I'll link to it from the show notes. We don't need to go into all the details. But one of the things that really stood out to me in that story, in fact, one of the things that really got me looking into it, was the fact that the police, as part of that investigation, used a specially trained electronics sniffing canine. So just as you might have dogs that sniff and identify drugs or other illicit materials, these dogs are trained to smell a specific component within electronics. And after that story kind of blew over, Kurt, you reached out and connected with the Seattle Police Department and were able to go and see one of these dogs in action. What was it like? Tell us about this dog, Nala.
Well, Nala was great. Nala's a 4-year-old English lab who is as sweet as any lab you've ever come across, and she's a very hard worker. It was interesting because my knowledge about police dogs is mainly rooted in either German Shepherds who are used to chase down suspects who are fleeing, or maybe arson or bomb detecting dogs. I had never read about electronic storage device dogs. They're called ESD canines. So anything that you can store data on, like a hard drive or a laptop or a micro SD card or, you know, you name it, these dogs are trained to sniff it out due to a chemical compound that's used in the manufacture of those electronics. And they're all trained out of the same place in Indiana. And it started a number of years ago with a dog that actually ended up working with the Seattle Police Department that got its start on the case of the subway pitchman.
Jared.
Remember, he was busted for some child sexual materials that they found, and a dog sniffed that out at his house. That dog ended up with SPD. His name was Bear. Nala is Bear's successor. So she works all kinds of cases, all kinds of warrants related to child internet crimes. Sexual exploitation of children, whether you're downloading imagery, whether you're communicating with somebody online and your ISP has flagged that to the proper authorities, Nala and the law enforcement personnel who work with Nala are going to come to your house and they're going to find the stuff that you've tried to hide.
And this chemical, triphenylphosphine oxide, or TPPO, The idea is that Nala and other dogs that are trained in this work are able to go in and sniff this out from even like in the video that you showed, the detective hid it inside like a plastic strip that would be used to hide cables, computer cables.
Yeah.
And Nala was able to find it.
Yeah, we were in a room. They have a facility down near Georgetown in South Seattle. And we were in a basement room, like a conference room, pretty good size, tons of desks and furniture, a lectern, some filing cabinets, and Detective Dolly Gill, who is Nala's handler, hid probably 6 devices around the room while Nala was out of the room. And then she let the dog back in, and with a couple prompts, a couple taps on some furniture, she just said, seek, seek. And the dog went to work. The dog's nose went to work and found every device that she had hidden, some of them under chairs, some of them inside the lectern, like the micro SD card you mentioned was snapped into this little plastic strip. The dog went nuts. It wanted to chew through the wall. It was so motivated by the smell that it was detecting and motivated by the fact that it works for its food. Nala is only fed when she finds devices. So even at home, the dog does not eat out of a bowl. The dog works nonstop. It's not always work on a case, but if she needs to eat, then she needs to find something. So the detective is always sort of ready to feed her by hiding something, and then the dog finds it.
And you wrote that about 30% of the time, Nala will find a device that was overlooked by the human when Nala's brought out on a search warrant, for example.
Yeah, the police, human police, will go in first, search an apartment, say, and find what they can, and then bring the dog in to find the really well-hidden stuff. Detective Gill likes to bring the dog in second so that she just doesn't find a bunch of easy stuff and overeat.
Right, yeah.
She called her a flashlight. Basically, she shines a light on places that the human cops aren't looking.
I loved this story, and I'm really glad you followed up on it, Kurt, because it brought something positive out of what was otherwise a very negative story about what happened on the Expedia campus. And we should be clear, Nala was not the one who found that. It was a dog from Portland named Trinity, but same type of work that Nala does.
Yeah, Nala was on vacation when the Expedia case happened, so they brought Trinity up. But you make a good point. I mean, this work that this Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force does is not fun, and they have a tough time discussing it. People don't like to hear about it. Detective Gill said that when she first would tell people what she does, or tell me a story about, did you arrest anybody today? And then she'll tell a story and people will be like, I've heard enough. And
right. So
they just quietly go about sort of solving these crimes, and Nala is a big part of that. And it does, you know, she's got a little trading card that she gives to kids or a stuffed animal that looks like the dog. So it's all about just making the children who are impacted by this feel comfortable, and Nala does a good job of that.
I will link from the show notes to your coverage of that and also to the video that you took of Nala finding those devices, which is super impressive. I mean, it's incredible the work that these dogs do. Kurt, you're into comedy.
Yeah, I love comedy.
So coming up, we're going to hear some clips from Pete Ballmer. All right, welcome back. It's Todd Bishop with Kurt Schlosser. We are talking about the week's news, and one lighthearted item that came up was the son of Steve Ballmer, the former Microsoft CEO, the current chairman of the Los Angeles Clippers basketball team, the head of USA Facts, the nonprofit, nonpartisan data initiative based in Bellevue. Steve Ballmer, his son, Pete Ballmer, turns out he's a comedian, which actually is not a surprise when I really think about it. Steve Ballmer's a big charismatic personality, and you can kind of see that come through in some of his son's comedy, which has been featured recently in some interviews and an episode of a podcast that he recorded. This is not his stand-up routine, which we can also link to, but here he is talking about his reflections on growing up as the son of Steve Ballmer.
I have this very distinct memory, like the day he got CEO, I was like, you know, 9 or something. And I was like, in my bed, I was like about to go to sleep. And then my dad just comes in. He's like, I got a promotion at work. And I'm like, yeah. And I didn't even realize that that stuck with me. But thinking back, I can just picture that moment clearly. It was like, oh, that's when he became CEO. It was a big,
right,
big day for the guy.
Oh, so, my God.
That was his story time for you.
That was his story. The only time he read for me. No, I'm kidding. My dad was very sweet and a good
He's
father.
He's reading the Microsoft mission statement.
He just has an email. His performance review.
Yeah.
This fascinates me in part. You know, I've got to spend a little bit of time with Steve Ballmer. We did a podcast a few years ago called Numbers Geek, and he's very different behind the scenes than that big character that you would see on stage back in the day. But I can see Steve Ballmer's personality as passed down to his son in a different way, obviously. And I just think it's kind of cool that he's able to share these stories. I hope his parents are okay with it.
I like it. I like that he has a light perspective on that upbringing.
He gave an interview where he talked about sort of the issues with money, coming to terms with it, making sure it doesn't corrupt him or his siblings and how they talk about this. My takeaway from all of this is that he has a really healthy approach to it. I mean, it would be very easy to allow that to influence you in a negative way. And clearly, there's no escaping it unless you disown the inheritance and the money. And I know Warren Buffett has wanted to make sure that his kids aren't corrupted by it either. And I think he's put some controls on it in that way through the process of giving away most of his fortune. However, this to me is the sign of somebody who was clearly raised in a very balanced way, despite some pretty extraordinary circumstances.
Yeah, no doubt. We've seen plenty of cases of the children of very rich people who do not present with as favorable a persona. I played the Mega Millions this week. I think it got up over $1 billion. And I spent $2 thinking I could change my kids' lives. I could turn them into comedians.
Thank you, Kurt. This is great. On a busy week for you and for me and everybody, we're going to be glad when Taylor's back next week from his vacation, I think.
Come back, Taylor. We miss you.
All right. Until then, I'm Todd Bishop.
And I'm Kurt Schlosser.
Thanks for listening to the GeekWire podcast.